Have you ever had the experience when you think life is humming along nicely and all is well, and then all of a sudden something happens? Something out of the blue which just knocks you sideways. Something completely unexpected that shows you that just as much as we think we can control life, we're actually not in control of much of it at all. Raise your hands if you've ever had an experience like that. That's pretty much all of us. And we're surrounded by so many situations these days that can throw us off course. Things like devastating natural disasters with fires and mudslides and floods and hurricanes and earthquakes. And then there's the daily impeachment news and mass shootings and global viruses, just in case we didn't have enough to deal with, while war and violence rage. And if all that isn't enough, closer to home, many in our congregation are also facing illness, adversity, surgeries, the loss of loved ones, heartbreak, job loss, financial worries, and so much more. One thing is certain. No matter how hard we work to avoid difficult situations, pain, heartbreak, and failure, life will give us the opportunity to experience these, whether we're ready for them or not. Death and taxes are often called the only certainty in life, but I actually think that we can also agree that change and the unexpected are certainties. That much as we want to hold on to the reins of life and we set a particular course, sometimes life veers and gallops off in a different direction than we imagine, doesn't it? That certainly happened this week when the unexpected resignation of our music director happened. It took me completely by surprise. And I'm so grateful to Francis and Tom, who were able to step in at last minute to work with our choir and to be here with their great commitment to this community. Thank you. Of course, the universe always loves to give me first-hand experience to work with for my sermons. And this felt like the universe saying, here, you're preaching on resilience. Let's see what you do with this. It seems that one of the keys to going on amidst life's inevitable challenges is finding resilience. But how can we muster resilience when we feel shocked, or broken, or hurt, or scared, or challenged in some way? The word resilience comes from the Latin resilire. Re means back, and silire means to spring or recoil back to the starting point. Webster's defines it as the capability of a strained body to recover its size and shape after deformation. So it seems like resilience is about coming back to our core, to our original selves, to the heart of who we are. Indeed, Maya Angelou said, "You may encounter many defeats, but you must not be defeated. In fact, it may be necessary to encounter the defeats so that you can know who you are, what you can rise from, and how you can still come out of it." With the shocking death of Kobe Bryant and his young daughter Gianna, as well as other people in the helicopter crash not far from here this week, just a week ago, right now, I began thinking about the families who so suddenly lost their loved ones. It seemed like an ordinary day during which people were going to their regular basketball practice, but that ordinary day turned into a tragedy, claiming the lives of many promising people. It's so tragic. And those spouses and parents and siblings and kids who are left behind, bereft, have to find some way of going on amidst profound, unexpected heartbreak and loss. So how do we tap into resilience when we feel we will be swallowed up by grief or broken by heartache? How do we find resilience when our very existence seems to dangle by a thread? How do we find resilience to come back to ourselves and find a way to go on through unimaginable pain? I know several of you in this room have had to deal with unexpected losses, when loved ones have been cruelly snatched from you without warning. And there have been illnesses and accidents and traumas that no one could have predicted, that changed your life from one moment to the next. And yet somehow, you're still here. You've been changed by those experiences, but you've also found some way to go on, to put one foot in front of the other and amazingly reclaim your life. As Helen Keller said, although the world is full of suffering, it is also full of the overcoming of it. Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, is a good example. She wrote in her book, Option B, Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, and Finding Joy, about when her life was turned upside down. She and her 47-year-old husband, Gary Goldberg, were vacationing in Mexico when he went to the gym and never returned. Seemingly perfectly healthy and strong and vibrant, he died from a sudden arrhythmia while working out. And they had two young children, and life without Gary seemed unimaginable. Sheryl suggests, build resilience in yourselves. When tragedy or disappointment strike, know that you have the ability to get through absolutely anything. I promise you. I promise you, you do, she says. As the saying goes, we are more vulnerable than we ever thought, but we are also stronger than we ever imagined. So let's look at some key components for building resilience in ourselves. What tools do we need for making it through the inevitable suffering that we face in life? How do we find the strength, the courage, and the wisdom to deal with the unexpected challenges that life throws at us? Meditation teacher Satchitananda says, you can't stop the waves, but you can learn how to surf. Am I right, Dave? So what does surfing the ups and downs of life actually look like? The research I did for this sermon led me to distinguish four useful tools. And there are many more, but I believe these are some of the core strategies for building our resilience. In situations of extreme shock, normally our fight or flight instinct will kick in. And it's easy to want to run, but where to? Unless we're literally escaping danger, there's nowhere to run to or nothing to fight. So we perceive danger, but there's actually no place for us to go to escape the inevitable pain, the confusion, and stress that ensues. So we just have to be with it. Be in it. Just be. So the first thing to do after a great shock or tragedy, if possible, is to simply slow down. If there's no need to run, then just slow down. Take a breath. Take a few deep breaths. You could use a balancing breath with the alternate nostril breathing that we just did in our meditation. It's an excellent way to calm both hemispheres of the brain in the midst of stress and reduce the fight or flight sensation. Also, I invite you to feel your feet on the ground, perhaps even touch your arms or your heart or your legs to feel your own physical being right here, right now. And then just pause. The temptation is to go right into action, isn't it? To react, to do something immediately to help move the pain away or deal with the situation. And of course, in times of real danger, if we are being chased by a lion or other predator, we have to take action right away. Ignore the advice to slow down, please. But if you're not in immediate physical danger, then slow down or find a quiet place where you can. When I was working as a hospice chaplain, I always counseled families who'd lost a loved one not to rush into making arrangements. Sometimes taking care of business immediately is a fight or flight reaction that takes us away from feeling the pain for a moment. And in those times, it's hard to think clearly. The blood has actually gone from our brains and it's gone to our muscles so that we can run as we deal with a crisis. And so our thinking, our decision-making, even our driving will be impaired for a while. So slow down, breathe, become present to the fear, the shock, the moment. This is a time out of time, and you may be in an altered state, so keep breathing. And if you feel pressure to act, tell people you need some time. Time to process, time to find your feet. And if you feel paralyzed with grief or fear, just sit. Stay where you are. And then if you're up to it, begin with baby steps or do simple, ordinary things like taking a shower or making a cup of tea or coffee. Or get some sleep, or cuddle with your dog or cat. Because when things feel out of control, it's important to find simple things that are in your control. So the first tool is slow down. And then once the initial shock has passed, then we're usually flooded with feelings, aren't we? And it can be natural to want to suppress them or want to run away from them. But wisdom invites us to stay. Stay with the feelings. Be with them. Allow them. Go through and not around your feelings. Go through and not around your feelings. And you might find that repeating a simple phrase like, all will be well, or singing a song like, you are not alone, could be of help. But the main thing is to be with what is, as uncomfortable as it may be. Be with the grief, the anger, the shock, the disbelief, the fear, the pain. Avoiding or escaping these feelings, my friend, will simply make them flood back at inopportune or inappropriate moments. The poet David White says in his book, Consolations, the antidote to despair is not to be found in the brave attempt to cheer ourselves up with happy abstracts, but in paying profound and courageous attention to the body and the breath, to see and experience despair fully. Allow yourself to grieve, to be with the pain for as long as you need. Grief is pure, holy cleansing. And this is actually the psyche's way of healing. Grief is a way to process the injury or hurt that has occurred. Think of it like blood rushing to an open wound with new cells and tissue to heal it. Emotions flood our beings to help soothe the overwhelming sense of danger and uncertainty that we are experiencing. Sheryl Sandberg grieved intensely for 2 years, and then slowly felt she could begin to get her life back together. But for others, the grieving process takes many more years. Sometimes, my friends, it takes a lifetime. Whatever the timeline is for you, it's okay. We all have different ways that we process our life and experiences, different ways that our systems deal with shock and grief, and we should never rush anyone through that process. Navy SEAL Eric Greitens' book, Resilience, says, life's reality is that we cannot bounce back. We cannot bounce back because we cannot go back in time to the people that we used to be. The parent who loses a child never bounces back. The 19-year-old who sails for war is gone forever, even if he returns. You know that there is no bouncing back. There is only moving through. What happens to us becomes a part of us. And resilient people do not bounce back from hard experiences. They find healthy ways to integrate them into our lives. So, my friends, we develop resilience by being with and moving through our fear and our grief, becoming stronger within to face life's inevitable challenges. We cannot go back to how things were before. Things will never be the same. We are forever changed by our loss and by our struggle. It becomes part of the fabric of our being. So, secondly, feel your feelings and move through and not around them. And this time of moving through our feelings is also a time to practice great self-compassion. Cultivating compassion and empathy, both towards yourself and allowing it in from others, is the third key. Now, you might wish to practice loving kindness or metta meditation, where you offer empathy to yourself and then to others. You might want to sing the song, "May I be filled with loving kindness," while you put your hand on your heart. Or you can do the practice recommended by psychologist Shauna Shapiro, in which you simply greet yourself in the morning with the words, "Good morning, I love you. Good morning, I love you." She's written a book about self-compassion by that name. And then you can check in with yourself with simple phrases like, "Sweetheart, how are you doing right now?" And then you listen for the answer, and you have empathy for yourself, and you might say, "I feel really sad right now." And then you can say back to yourself, "Of course you do. Of course you do." And then have a conversation between your inner wise adult and your wounded self. It can actually work wonders. It helps you tune into the self-care that the hurting self needs in this time. And the other thing is to open up to the compassion of others. Others wish to help. They wish to hold you and be there for you. Allow them in as much as you can. Buddhist teacher Sharon Salzberg says, resilience is based on compassion for ourselves as well as compassion for others. So the third tool is compassion. And finally, like the story that Sam told earlier, be the coffee bean. Allow yourself to blend into the new environment, to be ground and shaped by it, to soak into it, to create something new out of the alchemy of suffering. In fact, anytime you can make meaning in some way out of suffering, you move away from despair. Entrepreneur Chip Conley has an expression saying, despair equals suffering minus meaning. So this equation is despair equals suffering minus meaning. Of course, it's okay if you can't make meaning right away. It can take a while to feel that you're ready for this. But when you make some kind of meaning out of your circumstances, you lift yourself out of that unbearable place. And you can make meaning in simple ways by noticing how your heart has opened through this experience, or how loved and cared for you are by others. Or we might give thanks for the simplest good in our life, like an aromatic cup of coffee, or what's beautiful around us, like a delicate flower, or the sunrise, or birdsong, or a comforting piece of music. Notice the simple things and offer gratitude for them. Because by being grateful for the most ordinary things, we can begin to make meaning in our lives and notice that not all is lost. When I reflect on the fragility of life, that things can change in an instant, I'm reminded that I need to savor every moment and be grateful for all that I have and am right now. Often I take life or people or situations for granted, only to be unexpectedly reminded that I shouldn't. So the fourth tool is seek meaning if you can. Finding resilience in difficult circumstances is challenging, my friends, there's no doubt. But I believe we can all grow that muscle. So just slow down, feel the feelings, allow compassion, and seek meaning. And don't forget that there are others around you who care. Sheryl Sandberg said, we find our humanity, our will to live, and our ability to love in our connections with one another. So in closing today, I want to offer each of you a rubber band to remind you of your resilience. Now, rubber bands stretch and get pulled to their limit and in different directions, and then they have the marvelous ability to return to their original shape, no matter how much they're stretched and pulled. And I invite you not to snap, because that can hurt, but allow it to come back gently. And that's a good metaphor for resilience, too. Don't force yourself. Allow yourself. Now, your rubber band is going to come from one of these marvelous rubber band balls so that you can remember that you are not alone. There's a whole community of people working to be resilient with you, going through life with you. And we're going to pass the rubber band balls around and invite you to take one or two rubber bands or three, whatever you feel you need. And as you pass it onto your neighbor, I invite you to say, may you find resilience in hard times. May you find resilience in hard times. And then wear them around your wrist for this month of resilience. And if you need courage or a reminder of your strength, just remember the community that this rubber band came from. And know that you are held in love and care. And while we pass out the rubber bands, feel free to join us in singing another round or two of You Are Not Alone. Because, my friends, you are not alone. We are here with you. May you find the courage, the resilience, and the compassion you need to make it through life's trials. May it be so.